The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
This is the Seahawkers Podcast. I'm Brandon Schultz of the Military Seahawkers. And today, I am joined by the incredibly handsome Mr. EJ Snyder at Bootleg Football, or at Football EJ, wherever you want to get him, out on Twitter. And he's back, leading up. We are in the month of the draft, EJ. And man, oh man, I have to imagine you are fired up to just see all of your work come to fruition as you watch the players come off the board exactly as you predict throughout the first, I don't know, 3-4 rounds before you get one wrong.
Yeah, no, in complete lockstep. This is all autopilot. I have no more work to do, and I am absolutely predicting that is what will happen. No, it doesn't work like that.
Oh, shoot.
Once I get all that work
done. I was promised
done,
a draft expert on the show.
That's right. And somebody delivered me instead, so you're going to have to put up. No, it's a great time. We're 17 days away at this point, and when we're recording this, there's a lot to do. Won't get it all done. Enjoy all the stuff I do get done. And we're looking to have a great time. We go to KC this year.
Man, that's going to be a good time for sure. I'm not going to make it to the draft, but I want to be, just because there are so many different potential picks for the Seahawks. Now, could they trade down? Maybe they could trade up. I saw a report here recently, EJ, that maybe the Seahawks and the Arizona Cardinals could make a trade. And I'm kind of curious from an outside perspective what you would think of that, because I can somewhat rationalize it, but I can also make the complete opposite rationalization, because here's my thought process. The Cardinals, they don't need a quarterback, but they do need defense. If they trade with the Seahawks, thinking that the Seahawks would take a quarterback at number 3, then they still potentially have the top defender on the draft board at number 5. And so getting more picks and getting the guy that they want, Seattle is in a unique position to make that happen for them. But then I also think, okay, for that to happen, for instance, I've seen Bryce Young appear as the favorite for DraftKings as the top quarterback on the board. Okay, let's say Bryce Young goes first, and then the Texans do something really crazy and take Anthony Richardson second, and that leaves C.J. Stroud as number 3. You know, could the Seahawks then be interested in a quarterback? But then if Stroud's there at number 3, why would the Arizona Cardinals want to make that trade to give Stroud to the Seahawks? And so then it all falls apart.
Yeah, you've been breathing all the smoke that we talk about during draft season. It is smoke season. It is lying season. Yeah. It is never be sure or trust everything about what you hear season. It's possible. The fact that it's in the same division makes it really challenging. There would have to be assurances. The Cardinals would take those assurances. Their new GM, Monty Osport, who came from the Titans, would definitely say, like, sure, we'll give you the pick, but you have to tell us, you know, at least which position you're taking, or we're not giving it to you. Interdivisionally, I'm sure that would happen.
And then we lie to them, and then we hose them and take our top defender.
Yeah, exactly. You could, but they'd still be in decent position, and they'd still have extra ammunition, which they need. So is it possible? Sure. And Seattle's in a unique position with Geno as well. Re-sign Geno for good money, not great money. There's really only sort of 1 year guaranteed, 2 is likely, but that puts them in a position where they have quarterback stability. And if they want to take a developmental quarterback for the future that has huge potential, a guy like Anthony Richardson, that seems like a possible John Schneider swing, right? He could do that. He could say, I'm going to go all in because I believe that this is the guy that's going to lead us forward, not for the next year or year and a half, but potentially for the next 8 to 10 years, and set the franchise up to compete as a superpower in a league where having a super weapon at quarterback is really, really important. So,
well, it's my possible. Argument was completely hinged on Stroud being there at number three. I think if you're going to go Richardson, maybe you stay put, maybe you trade back. I don't know.
It's very possible if you stay put, you're not going to get a shot at Anthony Richardson.
It's possible. And I might be willing to take that risk, but we'll see if the Seahawks do. And that's part of the fun of this is that right. I don't know what's going to happen. As much as I see out on Twitter, people telling me that so-and-so isn't going to fall past such and such position. And if I were to believe all those people, it would be really difficult to build a draft board that looks realistic. But the Seahawks currently at number five. And one of the things I'm talking myself into more and more, well, one of the things I've heard out on Twitter is that, well, Jalen Carter, you know, that he's not going to be on a consideration for the Seahawks because all of his off the field issues, you know, he should be off their board. And then I see a report that Jalen Carter is only going to meet with teams inside the top 10. Seahawks still one of those teams. And what do you know? Jalen Carter has a visit scheduled with the Seahawks on Tuesday. And you said this is smoke season. I want to get your opinion on this. If a player is coming to visit a team's facility, they only have so many of those visits.
It's true. 30.
30.
Yep.
Are you willing to waste one of those? And maybe it's not a waste. Are you willing to use one of those strategically to put out smoke, to make an appearance that maybe you are interested? Is it worth it? Or yes, they have a pick inside the top 10, but they also have the 20th pick. And that's they're in a position that, hey, maybe Jalen Carter does slip. I don't know if he does, but if he does, they're at 20. And hey, can they then trade up with some of their other ammunition and move up a little bit closer if he does start to slide or stay put? I don't think he's going to go that far down the list. His agent doesn't seem to think that he's going to go that far down the list if he's putting out. Now, again, smoke or not smoke that he's going to slide outside the top 10. I don't know.
Yeah, there's a lot of that. A lot to unpack. The 30 visits, we'll start there. Are teams willing to use them to do things that are purposeful and maybe truthful or untruthful? And the answer is yes. All teams use them differently. A lot of teams will not use those visits for players that they have met with at the combine, for instance, because teams get multiple chances to meet with players. They get the All-Star games, whichever All-Star game they go to, they get the combine, they have these visits. A lot of times they've talked to them as underclassmen. If they're there when they go to pro days and the underclassmen are there, some schools allow that, some schools don't. There's multiple different chances for a team to get to know a player. Some teams will use every single chance. Some teams will use those chances very sort of prescriptively. For instance, if you look at the 30 visits for the Bears, about 18 or 20 of those have been completed at this point. And there's a lot of names sprinkled from way down the board there. And that's how some teams use them, is to get more information about players who maybe didn't make it to an All-Star game or weren't invited to the combine. So they don't have that other chance to meet them. So they use the 30 visit to do that. Other teams use it as due diligence for, hey, we're in the top 10. We're going to interview all the possible guys we think are going to go in the top 10 because we want to be prepared for movement up or down. And then still other teams will use it for smoke or subterfuge or purposely not bring somebody in to sort of highlight that they were at the facility and feign non-interest. So it really depends on the team. Jalen Carter specifically. Drew Rosenhaus is his agent. He came out and said he is not taking visits outside teams from the top 10 because he is not making it out of the top 10. That is one of two things, depending
on... Do you buy that specific point?
Yes.
Okay. That was you took a long time to answer that, though.
Yeah, I need to be careful about what I say. Yes, I buy that. So I'll give you two possibilities of why an agent would say that kind of thing at this time of year. One, he's trying to drum up interest and make sure his client doesn't fall out of the top 10. Or two, he's already gotten assurance from a team inside the top 10 that says, if he's there at our spot, we are picking him.
So it's the second one.
one of those two things is true with Drew Rosenhaus. I don't believe Jalen Carter, just on film alone, as long as the off-field stuff settles itself out and is not, you know, grievous. And, you know, teams have a pretty high tolerance, most of them.
But his workout, he was 10 pounds overweight for his workout, yeah, AJ.
His workout was bad, and he was distracted. Like, he's got a lot going on off the field, and his future professional life is flashing in front of his eyes a little bit. Not a lot. I think still most folks in the NFL realize it's a meritocracy. It's not about assembling choir boys. I'm not saying go out and get guys that are lawbreakers. I'm saying people will put up with a lot if you can play good football. And that has always been true. We can argue endlessly about the morality of that. The bottom line is the NFL is a meritocracy. If you win, you get to keep your job. And that goes for players, coaches, GMs, the entire staff in a building a lot of times. If you lose, you don't get that choice. You're going to get moved on for somebody else that can do, that can change that outcome.
And see, I even let some of the talking points slip into my speaking there, because it's not that he was 10 pounds overweight. He weighed 10 more pounds than he did at the combine, if you want to be accurate.
Yeah. And he didn't look good at his pro day. Let's just put that out there. He looked terrible. He didn't finish a bunch of drills. He looked out of shape. He was definitely distracted. But there have been some very notable players who happen to be defenders, in the case I'm thinking of, that have had terrible pre-draft processes. And offensive players. Orlando Brown Jr.
Oh, yeah.
Had one of the worst combines in history. Just signed a big money deal to play left tackle, right, on his trade. Calais Campbell famously says, hey, I didn't prepare for the combine the right way. I had a crappy combine. I was not ready, and I played like junk. And I got drafted lower because of it, and then I proved that I had the talent once I got to the league. There's any number of reasons that make testing data either inflated or less important than you might think. He did not have a good pro day. He did not look focused. Is it concerning? I imagine it is if you are gambling what teams gamble in the NFL on a top 10 pick. If you believe that that is because of everything going on off the field, and once he gets focused, refocused, hopefully in his life, and focuses on football again, that he will look like the Jalen Carter that has been on tape in the SEC for the last 2 years, you have no problem taking that guy in the top 10, as long as you believe whatever's going on off the field won't keep him off the field. If you believe he'll be available and on the field and able to produce like he has on his tape against top competition, the top competition in college football over the past couple of years, he's the most talented player in this draft, regardless of position. That includes folks like Bijan Robinson. Like, Jalen Carter is the number one player in this draft based on physical and tape. Like, end of story. If you can get that guy not at the top spot, you know, in the Seahawks case at 5, or a team in the top 10 a little bit farther down, and you are comfortable again that he is going to be available for you to play football on Sundays, you do it. And that is why I believe the top 10 talk is true from his agent that he's not going to be available after 10. I think that's very, very likely.
And I don't blame Seahawks fans for having hesitancy, because we just went through the situation with Malik McDowell not too long ago. And
bingo,
he was a guy that going into the draft had some of those, not those same concerns, but he had concerns, and then he never makes the field for the Seahawks. So I can understand hesitancy from a fan's point of view, but yeah.
I understand. That lines up very strongly for Seahawks fans, and I get it. I completely get it. I was scouted Malik McDowell. I understood all that. His tape was quite different than Jalen Carter's, in the fact that his highs were extremely high. His flashes were tremendous. And everybody said, look, if you can get more of these flashes out of him, he will be a top NFL defender. That is very different than all he does on tape is flash, and he wrecked the SEC when, like, 9 of his defensive teammates got drafted, and everyone knew that none of those guys was the best player on the field because Jalen Carter was. I mean, that's what scouts were saying last year. Who's 88? Like, yeah. You watch that. You watch Jordan Davis and Kobe Dean and all the other Quay Walker, all Trayvon Walker. Mm-hmm. All those guys were on the same defense, and people were still like, who's 88? Like, when's 88 coming out? Like, 88's the guy that's wrecking everything. 88's Jalen Carter. And there's good reason. So it's different. And everybody's situation off the field is a little bit different. Malik McDowell had some red flags, ended up, I would say his incident was maybe related to those, but unrelated, who knows? But, you know, it obviously didn't work out. It was a very high pick. It was thought of as a massive reach. Let's talk about that when Malik McDowell was taken. A massive risk, let's say that.
Yeah.
Seattle was definitely betting that those high highs could come out more often, or they wouldn't have used that pick on it.
And they were getting toward the end of a Super Bowl run, right? Where they were 100%. Willing to take some of those risks because they wanted to stay in that Super Bowl window, I think.
100%. Jalen Carter, not the same story based on tape, not the same risk to select him based on the football side. Off the field side, can't speak to that. Not involved with that. Don't know about the details of that. Certainly have heard some things, but don't know what's true, what's not, and where that current situation is. NFL teams are going to have a much better bead on that than any fan or analyst or anything else. And they're all going to make their own decisions about, we accept this level of risk, or that makes us uncomfortable with where we're picking or with our need, or we just rather have somebody else for any of those reasons, and we're going to move on. But there's not more than 10 teams from the top 10 that are going to do that. Somebody's going to pull the trigger when he gets down.
So as I'm working through this list, we've kind of hit on quarterback a little bit. We've talked about Jalen Carter. I know we've talked about Will Anderson in the past, you know, whether or not he would make it there to five, or whether or not a trade could work out to where they would move up. I don't know, but I'm working my way through the list of those spots in particular. And then I get to, okay, if they're not going to go interior D-line, if they're not going to go pass rusher, if they're not going to go quarterback, where would they go next in a way that would make the team instantly improved and at a position of somewhat need? And that's when I get to a spot that really the Seahawks haven't taken in the draft higher than the third round, and that's cornerback. And I just, EJ, I can't help but get excited about the idea. Okay, you just drafted Tariq Woolen. You got him on one side. You've got your safety depth and Quandre Diggs and Jamal Adams, and you bring in the dude from the Giants. And what if you had another rookie corner that was like the top guy? And that kind of excites me.
It looks good on paper. There's no doubt. I think the Seahawks probably think more of Kobe than you do. but that's okay. They drafted him for a reason. He was highly thought of,
yeah,
in the draft, you know, mid-ish round pick, but,
and I'm talking outside corner, and maybe Kobe can move back outside.
And, well, he played outside at Cincinnati. Yeah. We'll see. But the idea of adding a top outside corner from this draft is attractive, and it does really shut down a large portion of the field with as many multi-DB packages as current NFL defenses play, and as much as opposing offenses lean on the pass. Having another top-tier weapon as a sort of anti-pass defender is really attractive. And there's some good ones in this draft.
Good ones, though? Okay.
If they stay at five, it's rich.
Okay.
Right? I think you've got to go, and people say, oh, well, the Raiders. Yeah, but the Raiders have much greater need than the Seahawks do, because the Raiders don't have a Tariq Woolen on their roster.
Yeah.
And their nickel is okay. He's good when he's healthy, but again, health has been a problem. So they have like two or three needs to really start filling secondary. So a pick for them at seven is much more likely. It's projected in lots of mock drafts. For the Seahawks to prioritize that spot that high, it's possible. Again, hasn't been their historical trend. They bucked a lot of those last year with their draft class, which is the most successful class in the last certainly 5 years, probably eight or nine, in terms of draft classes. Could they buck the trend again and pick a guy like Devin Witherspoon or Christian Gonzalez? They could, and it would look really good. Like, I can tell you, the folks in your division would not be happy about that choice. Both of those guys are extremely good football players, and paired with all the other talent that you talked about in the secondary, that's the thing. I think the Hawks will lean more towards the pressure side of that equation and making opposing quarterbacks getting the ball out faster and live with the coverage they've got, or bolster, because this is an incredibly deep cornerback group and they can pick a very talented one later, and they've had great success with that.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's interesting. You threw out a couple names. You did not throw out Joey Porter Jr., who I see NFL.com's latest mock has Joey Porter Jr. going at number five.
It is not out of the realm of possibility because of the type of athlete that the Seahawks like at corner. They like length at corner, and Joey Porter is long when you talk about arms. He is also a very good, aggressive press man corner. Seahawks have shown a predilection for those types of players. Joey Porter Jr. is a guy, I think most people would think that's early. I think Joey Porter Jr. is a first round corner. I think he's probably a bottom of the first round corner, and that's no slight on him. Mm-hmm. Again, incredibly deep cornerback class, very good player. His production was outstanding. I was just looking up contested pass rates for corners in this draft. He's at like 38%. The next available corner in this draft is at 30. Like, that's a significant drop, and it's not surprising based on his tape. Would it be like a fall out of your chair moment? No. Would I feel like it's probably a little bit early? Yeah, but then again, come on, it's John Schneider. If he loves Joey Porter Jr., the edges he wants are gone. Nobody wants to trade with him, and he just goes, who would look awesome opposite Tariq Woolen, like, or really scary for opposing offensive coordinators? It would be a nasty pairing.
So it would, but there's more of that potential of perhaps trading back. Like, he wouldn't be the first corner that you would take off the board.
No, I would take Witherspoon or Gonzalez, depending on which style my defense played before I would take Porter. But Porter is, he's in the top five. Don't make any mistake. He is a top five corner in this class.
All right. Well, I don't know. It wouldn't even shock me if they decided not to go corner, because they have Kobe Bryant, they got Trey Brown, they got Mike Jackson. They have a lot of different guys. It's just, it's more that idea of, if you're not going to go pass rush, where can you put pressure on a defense? Having another lockdown corner, that's somewhat appealing. And I go through these things all leading up to the draft, and maybe that's why it's a good thing that the draft is almost here, because then I can stop playing these mind games with myself.
Maybe that's a good thing. You'll have to decide. It is part of the fun of the process. It can also be maddening when you're trying to lock things down. So one of the reasons that it's difficult for people like me to answer the question in the way of what I think a team will do, and I get asked that a lot, like, what do you think the Seahawks are going to do? And I'm like, I don't know. I can tell you what I would do or wouldn't do, but I can't necessarily. I've never met John Schneider. I'm not sure what he's going to do. And even people that have met him were probably saying, I'm not sure what John Schneider's going to do. He's been a wild card in the draft. He will probably continue to be so. He's been very successful. He is a master at working the board. Obviously, we've seen what he's done with trade downs in the past. But it would be fascinating. And you're right, in terms of impact positions on defense, it really starts with edge rusher, and then it goes to outside corner. In terms of value. So it is a premium position. Again, a little bit early. Or, hey, you could wait. He might be there at 20.
Maybe. Or, you know, they could go. I think it was probably the first time I had you on when we were talking Bijan Robinson as a potential running back option. And I've kind of come off of that a little bit because, okay, Ken Walker's the guy. Like, as fun as it would be to have two amazing running backs on the same team, there are positions of bigger need, and I think you helped me to figure that part out, but I'm still interested in running back. I think there still is a need now that, you know, the Bears took away one of our running backs, the Eagles took away another running back, so some of the depth gone with Travis Homer now gone and Rashad Penny with the Eagles. I think there is a need there, probably not first round need, but you know, could you talk me into maybe a Jahmyr Gibbs early in the second round?
It's possible. It's a very loaded position in this draft class. So the needs of the Seahawks line up very well with the depth of this draft. The deepest positions in this draft are edge, corner, running back, and tight end. Now, they don't necessarily need a tight end, but those other three, they could absolutely use up and down the board. And even in the middle rounds, they're going to have better options at those positions because there's so many players. Running back, there absolutely is a need, which is a little weird to say because Seahawks are one of the teams that has a platoon of four or five running backs every year, and they've had pretty good ones. I tend to like the players. We've talked about them as post-draft wrap-ups. as they've been selected, the Travis Homers of the world and the DJ Dallases. Now, DJ Dallas is still there. Kenneth Walker, you mentioned. And then another guy I really like, Darwin Thompson, who hasn't produced a lot in the league and does fill another role. But does that leave a space in a depth chart? I would say even in an average team's depth chart, yeah, they'd want one more running back in that room. In the case of the Seahawks, yeah, they might want two. And the good news is they're going to be able to find them. And you're really looking at sort of complements or replacing some of the things that Travis Homer and Penny did really well. Travis Homer, big contributor on special teams. So you'd be looking for that for sure out of one or the other of these players that you add, either through the draft or UDFA. Seahawks are famous for mining the UDFA ranks, and there are going to be some this year because there's so many running backs. They're not all going to get picked. There's going to be some quality players, especially guys that can contribute on special teams. So maybe they sort of replace Travis Horner's production later, either at the very tail end of the draft or right after the draft with an undrafted free agent. But who do they pick? Like, who do they pick as the, okay, look, Penny was a force when he was healthy. We want some more of that. We do. We want a two-headed running back attack. And we want a quality back. They don't even have to pick a Jahmyr Gibbs. He would be fascinating and really interesting because he would add a dimension that's even greater, a sort of playmaking dimension that's even greater than Kenneth Walker. And you know that I love Kenneth Walker. He was RB1 last year. But Gibbs is different on that scale. He is a threat to score pretty much whenever he touches. It doesn't have great size, but his playmaking is pretty special. And other than that, you'd have to see if they wanted somebody that could take more downs, was more goal line guy, a bigger guy, a pounder. Like, you have to sort of figure out what niche they're looking to fill.
Right.
And then there are multiple options up and down. One of the names I thought of when you posed this question to me, just kind of popped into my head was, Zach Evans from Mississippi. He started out at TCU. He isn't solidly in that mid-round conversation, very talented back, played in the SEC, does a lot of things well, reminds me, a little bit of a guy like sort of like Brian Robinson Jr. last year out of Alabama, who ended up with the Commanders. In the fact that he did a lot of things well, he didn't necessarily do anything amazingly well, but feels kind of like a Seahawks player to me. That's a tough thing to describe, but one of those players I think could fit. And then the other one played, quote unquote, right down the road, certainly in the Pac-12, has played a couple of games in Seattle at least, and that's Zach Charbonnet from UCLA. And I love Zach Charbonnet. I would be thrilled if he ended up as a Seahawk because he is a really fun player. He is a complete running back. He does bring some different sort of inside elements that Kenneth Walker can run, but you'd like to take some of those carries off of him. Contributes in the passing game. He's a pass protector. Feels like a sort of mesh and mold of a couple of things they lost that they could get in one player. And originally, we thought he might be the top back off the board. Things change in the college football world. He didn't come out last year. He probably would have been right up around there. Bijan Robinson's here. Zach Charbonnet is probably going to go in the third round, maybe at best. And, you know, if he's there in the fourth still, again, just because he's not the flavor of the month for whatever team is picking, like that starts to become a heavy, heavy value pick.
Okay, that's a name I'm going to watch for. A name that just jumps out just based on name alone is Tank Bigsby, because I just imagine him based on his name. I don't know if he at all lives up to that, but again, it's like Dick Butkus. Like that's a name of a dude that's born to play linebacker.
100%. It is a fantastic football name. He lives up to being a very good player and is a player I think might be a better pro than a collegian. He's a big back. He's over 6 foot tall, well over 200 pounds. He's a long strider with real speed when he opens up. His stride reminded me a little bit of Eric Dickerson. Now, I'm not saying Tank Bigsby is Eric Dickerson. Eric Dickerson, one of one, most productive rookie running back pretty much ever in the NFL. And he's a Hall of Famer. I'm not saying a guy that's never played a down in the NFL is a Hall of Famer, but he does have that long speed, a little bit more of an upright style. He's a little bit taller. He's not as tall as Dickerson was, but when he gets out and really opens it up, He's got tremendous speed, showed that against, again, SEC defenses playing at Auburn. Stop start is not really his forte. He doesn't have a ton of wiggle. He runs really fast on a curve. We call that curvilinear movement. He carries good speed through a curve. So those rounder breaks on outside zone, he can really continue to accelerate through those. And once he opens up, he just absolutely blasts. Has a pretty good stab step, which I don't really consider agility, but he'll use it to set up linebackers, basically push a block, put his foot in the ground, go the other way, and then open up that stride. Can get some big chunks, is an exciting runner, would be a lot of fun as a compliment to Kenneth Walker, who I think is has a more rounded skill set, still has a lot of that outside speed. We saw that pass catching ability. Tank would be a fun, like, it's almost not a contrasting style. It's just like more of the same, and let's keep going with speed and try and burn defenses for big chunks in the run game.
And you don't have to apologize for comping a player to somebody amazing. Although Pete Carroll, he always hesitated whenever he was trying to comp Chris Carson to a player that he really liked. And he never came out and said it explicitly, but I think one time he did hint that they wore the same number. And so I'm kind of thinking it was Jim Brown, but he never wanted to come out and say it. And
it is so difficult. I struggle with comps. You know me, we have this conversation. I struggle with comps mightily because it isn't a thing of nuance, right? People don't talk about what they're comping, and they don't talk about when they're comping it. Yeah. Are we talking about the collegian Brett Favre? Are we talking about the guy that went into the Hall of Fame and won a Super Bowl? Like, it's, you need to talk about when and what, and then you need to talk about physical profile or play style. And there's a little bit of physical profile, but again, I went back and I was like, am I remembering Eric Dickerson wrong or incompletely? And he was taller. He's 6'3". His weight measurements weren't quite as accurate in those days. It varies. He was in the high 220s, and he was just a guy that had incredible speed. He also had better feet on the inside than a guy like Tank Bigsby. So it's whenever you bring up someone very talented, Jim Brown or Eric Dickerson, or I comped somebody's running style to Emmitt Smith earlier, who I don't think is Emmitt Smith, but he reminds me, again, compact stature. Emmitt Smith was 5'9", 5'10", mid 215s, 220, stout guy, and he would approach the line and he would stay very balanced over his feet and flat, and then you'd see that little Emmitt shimmy shake, and then he'd, ball off around the side. He was faster. He famously didn't run a very fast 40, but he was, fast once he made his cut. He'd carry speed through cuts. He had great feet. And the way this guy who's in this class approaches this line, he's got a similar stature. He's about 5'9", he's about 218. And the way he sort of stays flat, balanced, square to the line over his feet, comes up to the line and then makes a burst and has very good speed, better timed speed than Emmitt did. That one thing reminded me, and I mentioned his name in the same breath as Emmitt Smith, got roasted for it. You're comparing a fourth round running back to the greatest of all time. You went right to the top of the mountaintop. So people have a lot attached to comps. And if you're trying to have any kind of nuanced discussion, comps are probably not the best way to do it. But
what you have to do then, just to give you a little bit of advice, EJ, you either comp them to obscure Seahawks running backs, like you could go with Derek Fenner or Chris Warren.
Chris Warren. Chris Warren's not obscure, is he?
He would be obscure if you were to ask a Bears fan or a Cowboys fan who Chris Warren is.
I don't know. I think of Chris Warren as a Seahawks legend.
He was one of my favorite running backs. And because you brought up Emmitt Smith, like my two favorite running backs of that era were Chris Warren and Emmitt Smith. So
awesome. I was extremely happy when they did the renovation to the bottom side of what is now Lumen Field. That they have the big sort of Seahawks history wall, and they have a big picture of Chris Warren, big painting of Chris Warren on the wall downstairs.
Oh, that's cool.
And I was like, oh, that's awesome.
I love that guy. Or see, you could go the Danny Kelly route and say he runs with the grace of figure skater Johnny Weir, and with the power of a tow truck.
And he reminds me of an antelope. Yeah, whatever it is. But no, Danny's, shout out to Danny Kelly. He's certainly a friend. And
I love his comps. His comps are inspiring.
I love his comps. I think I comped Keanu Benton's run stopping ability. Keanu Benton's a defensive tackle for Wisconsin in the draft this year. I comped his run stopping ability to a log skidder. I found some picture of a log skidder with like chained up tires. And I was like, I think I found Keanu Benton's comp for run stops, you know, and that was totally Danny. That was just me channeling my inner Danny Kelly.
Yeah. Well, the Seahawks could use a run stopper. I don't know if you watched any Seahawks football last year. They had a hard time stopping the run.
A little bit. Yeah, I did. They did have a hard time stopping their run. And when people say they need edge, yeah, they do. But they also drafted edge last year. And I tend to believe in the
And they drafted the edge the year before. And they went hard in free agency, getting new Chenna Nwosu. And he was pretty good.
Chenna was a guy that I liked.
I know.
Talk about that. But when people say specifically they need edge, I'm like, yeah, they need edge. But they need some other things as well. They didn't retain Al Woods. Shout out, pour a little bit out for our buddy Al Woods.
I know.
But they're going
to
need...
That's big old Captain Thigh Arms Al Woods. Yes, is his preferred name on this podcast.
And I 100% agree with all that. And they will miss him. He is a down eater in the NFL. You need those guys to come play positive downs for your defense and take load off the other players and play a very specific role. No mistake, Al Woods has been one of the better defensive tackles playing that role in the NFL. It's not a glamorous position, but it is very necessary.
But to that point, and sorry to interrupt you, but to that point, John Schneider, I've heard the interviews with him saying, yeah, those are important, but a dude who plays nose tackle in college generally can play nose tackle in the NFL. Like, we just need him to fill up space and put his arms out and hug a dude and bring him to the ground. Like, I could get that later on in the draft. It's probably not a position that either you wait until the fourth round or later to get a guy like that, or you find him in free agency before training camp starts. And he had essentially the whole offseason.
I will give you two names, and he is correct. Positional value, not before the third, for a pure nose tackle. We're talking about a guy that doesn't rush the passer. I think, Keanu Benton is different in that he can rush the passer. He can create inside pass pressure. He is also a great stout if you need him to be two-gapping run tackle. But in terms of a straight, the guy that John Schneider's describing, not before the third, and oftentimes available in the fifth. It's just a thing. It has been positionally devalued. So I'll give you a couple of names, one a little bit earlier, one a little bit later. Gerard Clark from Coastal Carolina.
Hey, like the small school guys.
Is a guy. Well, Coastal's hardly small anymore. Yeah, they used to be. But come on, they have the best mascot ever, the Chanticleers. Come on, it's the best. Anyways, Gerard Clark is a guy that's gaining some buzz. But again, this isn't buzz that's going to propel him into the top of, you know, round three. It's in that sort of middle to late round three. We start getting into comp picks. That's when people will start looking at him. I would imagine he might go in the fourth. He is a quality player, and he has a little bit of that two-way game, but he is a stout, stout dude, so he would fit there. And somebody that you're going to get later on, because he doesn't bring a lot of pass rush, but he is a very experienced player, and he certainly fits the physical mold, is Keandre Coburn from Texas. Now, a lot of people are talking about his teammate, Moro Ojomo, who's the more sort of five-tech guy outside, defensive end, maybe edge, depending on how you want to play him. Maybe he's a four-eye, maybe he's a five. Moro will go before him. Keandre Coburn is a classic, like, square cut Texas stump that just goes, nope. And I could see John being very attracted by that, again, for that role that Al Woods played of, we got to put you in the middle. You got to control gap and a half to two gaps. You have to do it for, you know, a few key downs when we need stops. We can't really have you moving backwards. We don't need you to do a lot else. Your play area is like 3 yards deep and about 10 yards wide. And that's your space. Play in your sandbox.
I like it. I also like the idea of taking center in the draft. And you posted on Bootleg Football recently your interview with Juice Scruggs. And so now I need you to tell me about Juice.
I love Juice. This is a sneaky good interior offensive line class, and that's guards and centers. There are more centers, I think, this year that are really talented. Again, there are centers that are going to go up high. The John Michael Schmitzes of the world. Joe Tippmann from Wisconsin is going to be right there. He's going to get picked either right in front or right behind him. I tend to think right behind him, but it's more about team fit and style. But there are guys further down the board like Juice Scruggs, who was the starting center at Penn State. We got to interview him. And another guy we got to interview at Shrine Bowl, Ricky Stromberg, who's also gotten a bunch of buzz, starting center for Arkansas. And one of the things that is the beauty of the work we do is you get to watch a lot of these defensive tackles and you go, okay, where did they have good games? Where do they have terrible games? And more guys got stoned against Ricky Stromberg in that offensive line at Arkansas in the SEC than I think a lot of people realize. Like, it just pops up in the notes over and over again. Like, didn't get anything. Ricky buried him. Ricky took his lunch money. Like, no penetration from the middle against, you know, Arkansas. And that was all Ricky Stromberg, very experienced center in the SEC, a little bit quiet, has a very good physical profile. He's a big guy. A lot of times centers tend to be a little bit undersized. Not the case with Stromberg. He's got good size, really good play strength, very smart player. Getting to talk to him was a lot of fun. But either one of those guys down the board, I think they're both getting a little bit of kind of late draft rise. People are realizing, oh, these are valuable guys. This is a valuable position. But they're still, because they're not the only ones, they're going to be available. The other one is a kid from Michigan, started out at Virginia, Olu Watimi. I always get that wrong. Great center, very athletic, probably go a little bit before those guys. But again, after John Michael Schmitz and Joe Tippmann. So lots of options. If you need a center, again, not a bad year. There's a lot of years where it's like, well, these are the two top centers. And after that, you're taking some developmental guy in the sixth. There are centers up and down the board that I really like in this class.
Okay. So if they don't go there in the first round, it's not
totally fine.
Okay. That's
good. It'd be great if they did.
Right.
Like, I could totally see them.
But don't be really like super down. Yeah, like, they screwed up this draft. Oh, what are they doing?
Yeah, no, not at all. If they pick up a guy like Stromberg or Scruggs, third, fourth, fifth round, whatever, be very happy. Those are good players. Are they going to be immediate starters? Maybe not. That might not be the thing. If they're pressed into a starting role, would they perform pretty well? I actually think both of them would.
Yeah. Well, in one of your latest videos, and before you get on out of here, EJ, really appreciate your time, but you guys had Emery Hunt on recently, and you talked about shadow sleepers. And first, I have to say, Emery is awesome. I always love his interviews. I haven't interviewed him yet, but I want to. And second, what are shadow sleepers?
What are shadow sleepers? Shadow sleepers are a sales pitch for players that go to the same school as their more highly thought of teammate in a draft.
Kobe Bryant, legendary shadow sleeper.
Indeed. He would have qualified. He would have been on our list. And I made a list of the, 38 or so pairs, or in some cases, trios. For instance, the Ohio State offensive line has three guys, both the tackles and the center, coming out of Ohio State this year. So that's a shadow sleeper trio, if you want that, or a high, medium, low, whatever you want to talk about. But really, the player that sort of sits in the shadow of their teammate who is more highly thought of or more highly touted, who might be better in certain circumstances or just isn't getting enough credit because everybody's focusing on their sort of bright lights counterpart.
Right.
It was a super fun episode. We gave him about 35, you know, sets of players to choose from. He picked five. We picked one. Had a lot of fun. Emery is one of our favorite people in the entire business. Certainly the hardest working guy I know in football. And that's all of football. He does 1,000 draft reports every year. He works for CBS. He covers the NFL, the USFL, the XFL, the CFL.
Wow.
I swear he never sleeps. He's big on HBCU prospects. The two people I ask when I need to know more about an HBCU prospect I haven't heard of or can't find any information on are Emery Hunt and Jordan Reed, because they're both extremely well tied into that scene and really knowledgeable, and usually can come up with an answer even if they don't have it for me. So just one of the most knowledgeable guys I know, one of the most giving guys I know professionally in terms of always sharing his expertise. And just he's just continually in a good mood. I just love Emery. I think I would be so grumpy if I lived his lifestyle, if I was that busy. But he's like never grumpy. I've never seen Emery like bummed or in a bad mood, and was really, really blessed that he just chose to spend as much time with us as he did, and said some really nice things at the end of that podcast about us sort of taking his work and furthering it and pushing it forward, which just nobody could tell me anything for the rest of the day. I was like, that's it. No, Emery Hunt, A, knows who I am, and B, says he really likes my work. Like, I'm done. I'm out.
Well, you had that interview. You had Mina Kimes recently. You guys have been crushing it on the interview circuit. And I know that you have your bucket list, and there's, what, like one name left on there. So you guys are running out of items in the bucket.
Yeah, we talked about this pre-podcast. You said you have to make a new list, and it's true, and for a good reason, not because we couldn't get any of those people, but because we will have gotten pretty much all of them at the end of the season. We've got, you know, one more, and we might get that one before we sort of fully get out of draft season. But incredible interview slate. We got a couple more coming. Matt Bowen is coming on the show again. He's fantastic. And then a new addition who we've been talking about having on the show for a long time, and we finally get to do it, is JT O'Sullivan.
Nice.
I'm really excited about that. He runs the QB school on YouTube, former NFL quarterback. You have to give him a little grace. I know he played for the Niners, but love JT's work, and should be an amazing episode. So we're looking forward to it.
Well, be sure and check that out. Bootleg Football out on YouTube. You can follow EJ at Football EJ out on Twitter. That way you're making sure you catch all those episodes. And EJ, really want to thank you for coming on and helping break down the draft coming up just a few weeks away.
Love to do it. And we'll have some fireworks for sure, because it never goes the way you think.
Never quite does. And I think with that, there's only one thing left to say. Go Hawks.
Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.